Thank you, good evening, nice to see you, thanks for coming along. Hey! Well, I'm going to plonk myself down in the comfy sofa. This is not my personal furniture, this came from some discount furniture warehouse and it's total crap. It's a bit dirty, it's had the odd rogue bottom upon it before mine. But it'll do for the night, it'll do for the night. And this is really a kind of a different show, not like a Jethro Tull concert, because this is really relaxed and we have all sorts of people coming up on the stage to do their bit, including some of you, in fact. And I've just finished a long tour with Jethro Tull over the last few months. I've been on the road throughout Europe and across North America. And I'm doing this, it's kind of my weekend job. I'm just doing this one for fun. And I have, amongst my many guests tonight, to start off with a co-presenter who's, well, you probably know from the radio station called The Planet. We have Jim McInnes. Jim, you want to join us over here on the comfy sofa? Here he comes. Hi, Jim. Let's do that elbow thing. Ah, good man. There you go. Jim, yours looks even more stained than mine, isn't it? I think people have had some kind of squishy sex on that one by the look of it. Oh, it works.
Yeah. All right. Hi, everybody. Hi. It's always great to be in El Cajon. It's a rock and roll town, if there ever was one. And I got to thank you all for all your support for all those years. You know, Ian, this is, I've been on the radio here in San Diego for 30 years. And this is probably the apotheosis of my career, being able to come out here and be Ed McMahon to your Johnny Carson.
Oh! No one's put it quite like that before, but well, that's certainly a compliment, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. A year ago, I was fired for no reason by that other station. It's hard for me to even say the call letters anymore, but just about 6 weeks ago, I was hired at The Planet, full-time job. And I'm so happy to be back doing and applying my trade and to be up here on stage with Mr. Ian Anderson. This is the real Ian Anderson, one of my heroes.
Well, thanks, Jim. And I mean, just to roughly explain where this show came from, I mean, the rubbing elbows thing is because I had to think of a way of politely bonding with strangers, because I hurt my wrist in a little accident on a stage a few years ago, and I had this kind of problem, and a doctor said, well, you're going to make it a lot worse if you keep shaking hands with people every day, especially on the road. You know, you've got to shake hands with zillions of people. So I had to think of something else to do. You can't really use your left hand, because in some cultures, you know, the world of Islam or Hinduism, using the left hand is considered a great insult, because, of course, the left hand is the bottom wiping hands. And some of those guys don't use toilet paper. So you mustn't use your left hand. So I had to think of something else, some other kind of bodily extremity that I could rub up against other people and not get arrested or taken the wrong way. So I thought, well, the Eskimos do the nose thing and I'll do the elbow thing. And it works, people like doing elbows, so we love elbows.
When Ian was on my show 3 years ago, we spent an hour and a half in the studio doing a radio show, but he had his little band in a on a CD player, and he came in with his flute and sat there and did, we did like, I don't know, 14 songs or something. But he kept doing this, you know, and I thought, oh, this guy's like germophobic or something. But I didn't realize that you had the carpal tunnel syndrome thing.
Yeah, it's a little, just a little bit, a sort of industrial injury of some sort.
Well, you've earned it.
Not to worry about it. But we're going to bring some of my fellow musicians up here onto the stage now. We're doing a couple of songs for you. These are great bunch of guys. It's their first time playing across America, and so they're a little understandably nervous, but they really are great folks. They're some of the finest musicians you'll find anywhere in the Yellow Pages. They really are. First of all, on keyboards, a piano, accordion, and other stuff, it's John O'Hara. Hiya, John. Yeah. On guitars, Kip Corby. On drums and percussion, is James Duncan. The young guy in the band, there he is. And Dr. David Goodyear on the bass. Dr. David, how are you doing? So we're going to do a couple of pieces now, which are actually you know, old Jethro Tull songs, acoustic pieces, so they fit the mood of the stick. So, yeah. This first one is really one that's it's about one of my favourite hobbies. I try and practice this hobby on a pretty regular basis. My hobby is waking up in the morning. I try to do that, you know, a lot. Because there's a lot of musicians, as you know, aren't there, who don't do that anymore. And I've had the honour and sometimes the drama of sharing the same stage with, you know, people like Jimi Hendrix and John Bonham and Keith Moon and a bunch of dead guys. And, you know, thankfully, I'm not yet one of them. But sooner or later, I shall join that big band in the sky. But in the meantime, I'm going to keep waking up in the morning. This is called Life is a Long Song. When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say. Well, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Yeah. If you wait, then your plane I will fail. As the verses unfold and your soul suffers the long day, and the 12 o'clock gloom stains the room, you struggle on your way. Well, don't you sigh, don't you cry, take the dust from your eyes. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. We will meet in the sweet light of dawn, as the pages retrain, there's a name all over your new dress, and the symphony sounds underground, but you and the deep rest. Well, don't you squeal as a hill rides your wonder wings. Life's a long song. Life's a long song. Life's a long song, but the tune ends to simper a song. Oh, And Slow Bell is from, I think, about 1971-ish. And we'll play another one now, which is of similar vintage, well, a little bit newer, a little more recent. This one is from the album War Child, and it was a song demonstrated in a kind of a way in the front cover, the back cover artwork, where Martin Barr was photographed, chopped off by the photographer's lens, incidentally, rather strangely, doing this kind of weird pose. He was not attempting, you know, some deviant sexual activity, but was actually just pretending to skate. And this song's called Skating Away on the Thin Ship of the New Day. A song of eternal and brash optimism. No harm in that, is there? Meanwhile, back in the year one, when you belong to no one, you didn't stand a chance, son. If your pants were untied, 'cause you were praying for humanity, and so what to society. One day you'll wake up in the present day, a billion generations removed from expectations of being who you really want to be. Skating away, skating away, skating away. You're the survivors of a new day. Yeah, 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 yeah. As you push up from the shore, pour into your head what's for, and make a peace with everyone. For those who choose to stay, will they just one more day to do the things they should have done? And as you cross the wilderness, spinning in your emptiness, you really have to pray. Looking for a sign that the universal mind is ready when to bash and play. Skating away, skating away, skating away. On the demise of a new day, yeah, 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 yeah. As you cross the circle line, well, the odds won't crease because you're ready on the run. And as the silver splendors climb, the color of the rye, shining in the setting sun. But do you ever get the feeling that the snow is taking every wind in the presence tense? All and everybody's on the stage, and it seems like you're the only person sitting in the audience. Skating away, skating away, skating away, on the thin ice of the new day. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Title alone, Skating Away on the Thin Ice of the New Day.
Yeah, somebody pointed out to me last night there was a Pink Floyd song of almost the same name.
Do you know that? Skipping on Thin Ice or something on the
Wall album, I was told.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, maybe the ice is in the title, but I don't think it's really in it.
Gosh, I want to put me stiff with a red hot poker. I didn't know that. So, who thought of it? Well, I suppose I did, because my thing was 74, wasn't it? They came a little later, I think.
Yes, indeed, 5 years later.
But it's so easily done to come up with the same title or even the same tune. You know, you can have people just accidentally, you know, will write a song and it's got a few notes of somebody else's song and they didn't realize it and then they get to...
And somebody takes you to court and then you end up, you know, what happened to John Lennon. He had to do that album of rock and roll covers and include Chuck Berry's song, You Can't Catch Me, because he quoted one line in Come Together.
Yeah.
Here come old Flat Top, you come moving on slow.
Right. Then George Harrison got nailed for another
one. He's so fine.
Yeah, and yet Led Zeppelin got away with murder. I don't understand.
No, you know what? That's so true because, you know, they're accused of ripping off
Willie Dixon.
Yeah,
Willie Dixon's the guy who
blues guys. But, you know, there's a brand new CD out, which I just got the other day, and it's done by blues men covering Led Zeppelin songs.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, Turnabout is fair play. I forget the name of it right offhand, but you can go find it at your favorite, download it at your favorite website, however you want to do that. You know, Ian, I have a question for you. As a songwriter, like, I couldn't write a song to save my life, okay? It's not easy. And I look at the titles here on your latest CD, Ruby's Dance, available everywhere, including... but you have titles like A Pigeon Flying Over Berlin Zoo. Now, I'm assuming that you were in Berlin and at the zoo and a pigeon flew over and you decided to write a song about it.
Yeah, well, I do visit zoos from time to time, so I do like to, you know, see, not captive animals, but captive animals who are happy and well looked after and
right,
you know, usually part of a breeding program that is something important. So Berlin Zoo is one of the pretty good ones, and I usually go into Berlin Zoo when I'm in Berlin, and on this particular occasion there was a pigeon just flying across, and I was walking amongst all these, you know, animals in their enclosures and locked behind, you know, wires and cages, and this pigeon flew free as a bird across the zoo. I thought, oh, brilliant, you know, must be looking down on here and thinking, boy, am I lucky, I'm just free to go wherever I like. And I thought, well, maybe not, because down here in the zoo, the animals are in their cages and in their enclosures being fed on fillet steak and lobster and Subway sandwiches and all the great things in life. And this poor pigeon is having to scavenge in the city streets and escape the clutches of the vermin catcher, you know. And I thought, well, who's really free? Who's, you know, what is the concept of freedom in this concept? So I kind of thought that was an interesting idea for a song. Yeah.
And of course, you did an entire CD about birds, the secret language of birds.
Well, it's a title track.
Great stuff. And the way that, especially in your solo work, the way that you, this is not lyrics now, the way that you work in music from all strains of music, world music is such a, it doesn't really define it, but I guess that's the only term we have now. To describe the way that you blend in influence Middle Eastern music and Irish music
and all that stuff. The thing is that I'm no expert in all these different kind of musical styles. But what I do is I like exotic food. I like to eat spicy, interesting things, and so it is in music that there's all these interesting blends of spicy noises, exotic things that you can draw on from different countries. And being like a chef in the kitchen, you can put all these ingredients together in a musical context and stir it all up, and sometimes you come up with something brilliant. Sometimes, on the other hand, it tastes like shit. You know, it's awful. Just like it does when you're fooling around in a kitchen. But musically, it's kind of interesting to do this. And so long as you don't start to believe that you are either a black blues singer, which patently I'm not, or an Egyptian bamboo flute player or something. I mean, I can't authentically do these things. I like to fool around with it. It's like taking a picture postcard when you're on vacation and sending it home. That's musically speaking, what I try to do. Just send a little flavor of things. Places I've been, people I've met, musicians I've met, musicians I've played with sometimes.
And if only everyone thought that way, you know, instead of having to put music into little narrow categories.
Yeah.
And classic rock is as bad at, you know, is as bad at that as anything else. You know, classical music has got to be over here. Classic rock has to be music from 1969 to 1982, and you only play these artists and stuff. Well, that's the way it is, but it doesn't have to be that way if more people thought the way you did, outside the box. You know?
Yeah, but if everybody did what I did.
And this show is a good example of thinking outside the box.
on the other hand, you've got to look at it from the other point of view. There's some just great classic music formats. I mean, great American music, jazz, folk music, rock and roll. It's very defined and it's very pure. And sometimes, you know, if you blend too many things, you're going to lose that essence. So I'm still a great supporter of the pure forms of music. I think it's important to keep them in the box. But some folks like me get to do the other stuff. So it's a good balance. You know, some people stick with the thing they really can identify and it's pure and it's essential. But some of us fool around. You'd come to my kitchen, you're going to get something interesting. You know,
no doubt. Weird. He's a big Indian food fan and he loves hot peppers.
And I didn't find one today.
I know, I figured that.
Caesar salad. Oh,
miss your habaneros.
Club sandwich. I'm going to play a song, which is an old piece from Jethro Tull. I come not originally from the north of England, but I briefly passed through puberty as quickly as possible in a town called Blackpool. And Blackpool is a vacation town. It's not really a place you want to go. I mean, it's like Atlantic City, but without the culture and class. And it's famous for one thing, which is that it has a big 500-foot iron tower built, Victorian times, and this looms large over the landscape of Blackpool. And if you're passing through puberty, then this is a little intimidating for a young lad, you know, getting his first stiffy and thinking, I can't match that. I can't do that yet. So this is a piece of whimsical nostalgia dedicated to a place that you really should never go to, Blackpool. It's called Up the Pool.
Salesman watches ladies in the sand, down for a freaking weekend in the hope that they'll be meeting Mr. Universe. The iron tower smiles down upon the silver sea, and along the golden mile there'll be swaying mugs of tea. The politicians there have come to take the air while posing for the daily press. They'll look around to blame the mess on Edward Bear. There'll be buckets, spades, and bingo cockles, mussels, rainy days, seaweed, and some castles. Robin in his home as boys is dangling down. Sundance, candy, starvation, and days. we'll do a new one now. This is one from Rupi's Dance. Rupi actually is a Hindu name meaning beauty, and is the name of a little, well, was the name of a little four-week-old abandoned kitten, one of a group of, a litter of kittens that we took in just before Christmas. And they were all reared successfully and given away to homes after Christmas, except for one little girl who was really sick and didn't look like she was going to make it for a while. But we got rid of the other ones, and she got miraculously better and said, "Oh, I feel better now, thank you. Can I have some little lobster, maybe a little fish? I feel good." So Ruby stayed with us, and she's just been neutered. She has had her uterus ripped out, and that's what we do with cats. We have to spay them, we have to neuter them in order they don't go out and get shagged silly and have kittens and populate the streets with more moggies. And so it's a responsible thing to do. I put it in cruel terms because we have to focus on this. Hard though it is, that's what we have to do with our pussy cats. So if you do have a cat and you don't really want to breed from it, then please do go and have it neutered, and it's going to feel happier too. I know I did. Right, so this is a piece which is called Caliandra Shade. It's kind of a coffee song. I like drinking coffee, and it's not only from Starbucks. You can actually buy it back in old Europe, as the Texan famously called it a few months ago, pissing off the Germans and the French and the... back in old Europe, we do drink latte and cappuccino in sexy European squares, watching those beautiful girls go by. Don't we? Yeah, I thought we did. I can't quite remember it, but I think we did somewhere along the line. This is called Caliandra Shade, or The Cappuccino Song. So easily done. I picked up the wrong fucking bamboo flute. And the worst thing was, a bar and a half went by, and I didn't even realize we're in the wrong key. I've really seen that. Oh, shoot me, please. Oh, I'm filled with self-loathing and disgust. But since this makes me seem more human and a decent kind of a guy, I might keep it in the show for tomorrow night.
Let's end this week.
Chipping fields, taking canvas and the coffee. Come now for this, and there's a rank among the children. They talk in a fluke and now they shuffle in the snow. You got a cappuccino living on a shortstop. I'm shipping fields, taking campus and a coffee. Comes half of this, and there's a ragamuffin children play. They talk in a flick and a belly shuffle in the shadows. You got cappuccino living on a short skirt day. I'm shipping fields, taking campus and a coffee. Come now for listen, there's a rank of children. They talk in a black and now they shimmer in the shadows. You got cappuccino living on a short skirt day.
I believe that the guests we were going to have, some members of the audience, were going to come up here and join us, and had been pre-selected by somebody. I got passed a note to say they hadn't turned up and picked up their tickets. They
maybe
must have chickened out. And
stage fright. Might have been stage fright. Yeah, we did. We did have a winner at the Planet. Her name was Nikki.
Right. Yeah. Nikki. Well, she's not there. Nikki, are you here?
I'm here.
I'll tell you what, Jim, you're going to have to go down and pick a couple of folks at random to come and join us. What do you think?
I'll do that if I can get out of this chair. All right, then. You got to do me a favor. Who's going to be ever so naughty? Let's see.
Just grab a couple and bring them right up here.
All right, then. I want one man, one woman. Or two women is always fun. Here, you two right here.
He's got somebody. There
Come
we go.
On.
Right, bring him right up. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, it's hard to see up here. Follow, walk this way. All right. No, I'm not faking it. I've got a bad back. Thank you. Here they are.
Bless, they're coming up hand in hand.
Oh. They even came together, Ian.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Come on over here. What's your names? How you doing? Okay. You got it. Hi, what's your name? Mary, nice to meet you. Dennis.
Mary
and Dennis, you come and sit down here. We'll have a little chat. I'm not sure about what. Have you got any really penetrating, difficult, awkward question you'd just love to ask me and hear me squirm and grovel and trying to get out of? Who is? Oh, he's in love with me. That's not much bloody good, is it? Because
is anything wrong with that?
Maybe not, but I have not yet had my first gay experience. which actually pisses me off, seriously, because what the, you know, most people, I mean, I was talking about this amongst the band the other day, and they all admitted that at some point in their formative years, they had been approached by another man, and you know, with intent to, you know, do what they do, play Sticky Bottoms or whatever. And so, I felt incredibly left out, because I'd never had a proposition of that sort, yet. And so I actually don't know if I'm, people say, you know, you're obviously not gay. And I say, I don't know, I could be. It's just something that I haven't actually got around to trying out yet. But Dennis, forget it. Forget it, Dennis. So apart from that, what else do you want to talk about?
Hey, are you guys here on a date?
Do I like America? Well, I do. It was difficult to begin with, because us shy, retiring British types, you know, we kind of get a little nervous about the more forward-thinking, brash, enthusiastic Americans, and it's a bit scary when you first come over here, but that was 36 years ago, and I've sort of got used to you by now. And America is great. The great thing about Americans is that when you find American people abroad, and you don't find so many as you used to, and obviously in this slightly scary environment and world political terms, but Americans abroad are just great people. I played in Germany, for example, in the 70s, and in places like Frankfurt. Yeah, and there were more Americans in the audience than Germans. You know, a lot of servicemen working over there. It's really great to meet people when they're outside their own country. They're just really pleased that you're there, and they really kind of bond with you in a way that you might not get if you're playing in their backyard. So I've had lots of great experience with Americans in different parts of the world. Those that are brave enough to go, unlike your president, who only recently got a passport for the first time.
Yeah.
Isn't quite sure where Baghdad was, but it sure looks great when it's on fire.
Yes, W, before about a year ago, had only been to Mexico 3 times, our president.
And one wonders why. What was the attraction of Mexico?
Make an oil deal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It wasn't the evil weed or the cheap.
Oh, it could have been.
Or the cheap totty.
Could have been. Yeah.
Actually, totty is probably not a word for you, is it? Do you know what totty? Does totty mean anything? It does. He knows what totty means.
More than
totty means. Yeah. It's totty means. What do you call totty?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Potty. Yeah. Right.
Stuff. You know.
The jig. Aztec two-step.
Okay. We're getting closer now. Yeah. So yes, I do like Americans, and more importantly, I think these guys like Americans because they haven't been to America so much as me, and they're kind of really enjoying meeting people and learning to love Subway sandwiches, which strangely is on the menu again tonight. I don't know why. Well, I think of myself as British, and I always have done, because there's always this strange, scary kind of thing about the Scots and the Irish and the Welsh and
going
the English.
To a bar.
And so I've always tried to be British, but yes, I am from Scotland originally.
Yeah!
Yeah, I was born in Scotland. Lived there until the period of puberty, as we were talking about earlier.
Your name is Scandinavian.
Yeah, well, going through puberty in Scotland is perhaps a little risque, because, you know, we wear the kilt in Scotland, is that right? And, you know, you don't want to go sort of willy wobble and dingly dangle wearing the kilt, you know, when you're going through that little awkward phase of life. At least that's my advice. Dennis, what can we do for you?
I think, as you say, when I was a young lad, my first experience listening to Jethro Tull was from behind the bucket seats of my older brother's car. I think it was 1969. And I followed all the way through, besides the awful lung, the War Child, all the way up through Stormwatch, and there isn't anything that I haven't been in love with. But I did have one question. As a junior in college, I spent the better part of 6 or 7 hours with 2 albums of Thick as a Brick trying to figure out the meaning of your lyrics. Can you shed some light on
how long did you spend trying to figure this out?
6 or 7 hours.
6 or 7 hours? I've been trying to figure this out for the last 28 years. He got off lightly. I don't know. You see, the thing about Thick as a Brick, it was a kind of a spoof on the concept album idea, and it was written, we pretended it was written by a 12-year-old boy. just because this was the daft, surrealist British humour of the time. So it was a spoof, it was a send-up. And interestingly, one of my guests last night in Los Angeles was a fellow called Harry Shearer, you know, the voice of The Simpsons, the bass player of Spinal Tap. And Harry, in Spinal Tap movie, he went under the name of Derek Smalls. And I found about 12 or 15 references on the Thick as a Brick album cover to Derek Small in the St. Cleve Chronicle. And I thought this was kind of strange. So on stage last night, I asked Harry about this and said, well, a little bit of a coincidence, Harry, if you don't mind my pointing this out. And he said, what? I have a copy of Thick as a Brick at home. He said, I've had it since 1972, but I never noticed all these, it's just a coincidence, he said. But maybe it's like what we were talking about. Maybe he just kind of did read this and it sort of went in somewhere in the back of his mind. He thought, what am I going to be called in Spinal? Derek Small. He didn't know where he got it from, but there he was, right across Thick as a Brick. And even in the Passion Play album, we repeated the joke, and Derek Small was the projectionist, I think, in the Passion Play sort of theatre program. So, why don't we get on to this? Oh, because you were trying to figure out Thick as a Brick, yeah. Well, it was very confusing, and obviously, you know, Harry Shearer didn't manage to get through the thing either. But, yeah. Do you like Spinal Tap? Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Do you know who I mean, Spinal Tap? Well, Spinal Tap was a fictitious dinosaur English rock band who kind of tried to make their comeback, and it was a movie made about probably 10, 12, 15 years ago, maybe. Featuring some of the folks from Saturday Night Live who went on to do a variety of movies, and they were very funny. And it was done as a kind of a serious documentary, or rockumentary, as they said. And you've got to get it. Go and get a DVD of Spinal Tap. If you haven't seen it, you've got to go and see Spinal Tap. It's a great movie. And it's so real that many of us think that you know, we are the subjects of the Black Sabbath, and all these bands think, oh, that's about us, that happened to us. So it is actually very funny. I think we'll do some music. You stay right there because you don't have to go just yet. You have to go a little later, but you don't have to go just yet. I'm going to do one of another new song. It's about my habit of not enjoying holidays too much and difficulty in relaxing because I get a little crazy after 3 or 4 days vacation and start turning tables over and being rude to waiters and being a bit obnoxious like I am most of the time anyway. This is called A Week of Moments. Some of those spicy foreign flavours we were talking about earlier.
Toilet and a skin, she has these.
Since I pulled Mary and Dennis up from that side, we'll go over here. Who's got a question for Mr. Anderson here? Do you? Do you have a question? What's your name? Richard?
Yep. I'm wondering that you have a hobby of the miniature felines, and I'd be interested in hearing a little about that.
I've always liked cats. I must have dogs at home as well, but I'm a kind of cat guy, pussycat guy. And I think I got involved a little bit with some of the issues regarding conservation of the small wild cat species. Because those big scary things, the lions and the tigers and the leopards, they're going to bite my leg off if they have half a chance. I like the 26 species of small wild cats. So I do think sometimes to... kind of see if I can help a little bit with some conservation things. Like we were doing in San Francisco a few nights ago, we did a fundraiser for a scientific expedition to go to the high Andes of South America to look for the Andean mountain cat and do some habitats and conservation work. So that's no big deal. I mean, it's, some other people might give. No, because you probably do all sorts of charitable things too, which is just as good. Staying safe in the rainforests. Elton John's got AIDS sorted out, or working towards it. We all do what we can in our own ways. If you give $2 to a cause you like, that's just as important as me giving $20,000 to something else, or Elton John giving $10 million to a nice young boy he met on the subway. No. Who else has got something?
I'm up here, Ian, and we have
a
couple of folks here who want to ask. Hello, ma'am, would you like to... ask a question to Ian Anderson.
I'm wondering what the song Jacqueline is about and what that means.
What song? Well, she's actually not with me. Jacqueline is the middle name of my wife, who's the first time who showed her. And so I'm not even sure if she's ever realized that it was a song kind of about her. Because I don't usually write songs about real people because I don't want to embarrass them. And so this one kind of just slipped in under the wire. So, but it is Jacqueline's the name of my middle name, my wife. Not spelled the same way, but that probably kind of got me off the hook, really. But it's a nice song. It's a kind of a love song. And, I think I've only done one or two of those in my life, so that's one of them. Good question. Who's... hang on, we... Aqualung was actually written by my first wife, to whom I was briefly married, and back in 1971. She came back with a photograph she'd taken of some homeless people in South London, and we made up a song together. We kind of wrote the lyrics together, and she was the one who came up with the line, which I actually always found a little embarrassing and found difficulty singing, but she was the one, she's responsible for the line that says, snot running down his nose.
Didn't
I thought it was a little obscene, a little disgusting,
Didn't your first wife write Aqualung, the song?
That's what we were just talking about.
Oh, right, that's what I said.
Yeah,
well, I'm too busy, Ian, because everybody wants to talk to you,
Yeah, she gets the royalties.
Hey, aren't you Ian Anderson?
Yeah, it's me.
Jim, you got to come back because we've done. Yeah, we've come. Yeah, that's good. I thought you were off again doing another sortie in the audience there.
Oh no,
but that was good. Good stuff. I'm going to tell you about my friends in Italy. I have a friend. He's a classical flautist. Italy's most famous classical flute player. His name is Griminelli, Andrea Griminelli, and very nice chap, very good looking, and usually does pretty well with the ladies. But when I did some shows with him and symphony orchestras last year in Italy, we discovered sadly that Andrea's girlfriend of long standing had left him for another flute player, not me, but was. Andre was devastated at this, and he'd asked me to write some music, a duet that we could play together in Italy. So I wrote this piece of music to cheer him up. It's called Griminelli's Lament. About as depressing as you could possibly get. But we did actually play this together in Italy on a couple of occasions, and on one of those occasions, against all the odds, the girl in question had come to the show, and she was there. And after the show, because I explained what the piece of music was about, and after the show, she came running backstage and surprised us and threw her arms around Andrea. Oh, Andrea, I love you. I love the music. It was so pretty. Oh, God, come back. All this beginning. And Andrea, being the true bloody Italian male, said, "Fuck off, bitch." Wasn't very nice, was it? Anyway, this is called Griminelli's Lament. We don't have Andrea and his flute here, but we do have the piano accordion, so we'll attempt this with gusto, confidence, and a little musicality. Broadcasting outside, screwing up my radio signal. keeps going off, which is possibly a good thing. Maybe it's a blessing, who knows? Well, that was Grimanelli's Lament, and this point of the evening is a kind of an embarrassment for me, I have to confess, and it's just something I have to do. I have to warn you off.
You don't mean the...
I do, because, you know, it's pretty much a convention, but something that happens at every rock and roll concert or every event like this is that I've got to ask you not to go near the merchandising stand out there, because there's a bad man out there who's just trying to take more of your money. He already paid to come in here. He's going to try and steal more from your wallet just to buy a bunch of old T-shirts that, you know, frankly, he's going to use to clean the cat's basket.
That's right.
So don't go near the merchandising stand.
If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Mm. But if you do have to go near the merchandising stand, and you feel compelled to make a purchase, then... You'll be there. And I'm hoping somebody will be here. Do we have someone going to give us a little glimpse of the... All right. I can see Tom, the merchandising man, coming onto the stage now. Tom, apart from... Yeah. We're looking for the lighting guy too, but that's it. Tom is wearing the navy blue merchandising shirt. Look, with the rubbing elbows patch on the sleeve. He's also got the matching hats and the not so matching shorts. He's wearing a kazoo in his mouth. The kazoo comes free with every t-shirt. You get your very own autographed kazoo. Don't go near the merchandising stand. Who else have we got up here? Ellen. Ellen's wearing the red t-shirt with my fabulous signature in white, which you too can copy and apply to credit card receipts the world over. Thank you, Ellen. Sarah. Sarah's wearing this kind of weird one where I look as if I've been irradiated by weapons of mass destruction. or plucked off the barbecue or something. Thank you, Ellen. Go over there. And, oh, it's got the tour dates on the back. And a little black pussycat. Ellen, turn around. Show the little black pussycat. No, just the back view. We're looking for the back view. The tour dates with a little black pussycat. Oh, bless. Thanks very much, folks. Good to have you up here. So, we're just trying to show you, just to give you an example of what you must not go and buy and waste your hard-earned cash on. Unless, as I say, you feel compelled so to do. But a special thanks goes to the band members who actually, I guess we probably spent maybe 4 or 5 days rehearsing all the music for this show. They spent a whole week learning the cheesy Shopping Channel music. Which I think they did very convincingly and rather worryingly. But go on, here's another verse of that stuff.
Money.
What? Gonna play a piece now that was originally ruined by Jethro Tull a few years back, a lot of years back. It was written by J.S. Bach about 300 years ago. We've been messing around with this fine piece of music ever since. So it's actually on, also been re-recorded just for a new Jethro Tull Christmas album, which comes out in a couple of days. So we've taken it a stage further, made it even less attractive than it was before. It was sleazy cocktail lounge jazz, now it's just got downhill from there, if that's possible. We're going to close the first half of the show with this piece called Beret. Yeah. 20 minutes later, we're going to be back for some more. Thank you. I'm afraid the radio mic doesn't cut out during the middle of this one, too. Right. Christmas album coming out in a couple of days, and I know it's early, but that's good to show up at work a little ahead of time. And so it's an album of all sorts of different stuff. There's some remakes of old songs, like the one we're going to play now, plus some new songs that I wrote for it, and some Christmas carols and Christian church music and some classical music with, you know, elaborations in the festive Christmas spirit. But it's upbeat and it's fun, but it has some musical weight. And a little welcome cynicism and downbeat stuff as well, just to balance things out. This one is maybe a little cynical. It's my idea of a Christmas, the alternative Christmas. It's the original A Christmas Song.
Where a mother lay her baby.
it. You do well to remember the things Elevator said. When you strike yourselves at the Christmas parties, you'll love when I tell you to take a running jump. You're missing the point, I sure does not be making the Christmas that is what we bring. So how can you love when your own mother's hungry? How can you smile when the reasons for smiling are wrong? And if I just messed up your daughter's pleasures, remember if you wish this is just a Christmas song. Hey, sample. Fast as that fucker, will you? I was very nervous, you know, when things came a little unglued in the Soviet Union towards the end of that Cold War period. It seemed like things could go, you know, pretty doomally out there, and we could all get nuked all too easily, and happily, of course, for us, there was one man who, more than any other, just let us sail through that difficult time and come out the other end good friends with our new neighbours, the Ruskies. And his name, of course, was Uncle Boris Yeltsin, because Boris was the guy who stood astride the tanks in St. Petersburg in the square there and saved us from the communist... Attempted to coup and put old Gorbachev out of the way, and Boris stood in the way and he did the job. He was a great man. He was a great man, really, because he was so fucking out of it on the vodka. He could never have found the button to press to send the missiles on their way anyway. Which is why my present to Mr. Blair and Mr. Bush is a very large bottle of vodka this Christmas. But let's not go there. Let's not do that. So this is for Boris Yeltsin and his three left feet. Boris was a terrible dancer, as you probably know. Remember on CNN, he was seen dancing in front of a young Moscow rock band in Red Square when Boris was seeking re-election and looking for the credibility with the younger people, looking for the younger vote. A bit like us, really. And Boris could not dance, he could not play tennis, he was a very uncoordinated guy, so I thought I'd write this piece of music which amply demonstrates the lack of coordination that we're about to exhibit now as we attempt a very fiendishly difficult Boris dancing. John O'Hara on the accordion. One, two, thank you. Oh, you got in the voice.
Come sing them.
Yes. Why don't I introduce you to the members of the band here? I think you know Ian. But traveling along with him, some of the guys he found in the Yellow Pages in England. This is John O'Hara playing keyboards. And John, what have you done before hooking up with Ian Anderson?
What I do? I used to play in bands and gig around, and then this gig came along.
And are you having a good time?
Am I having a good time? It's great being in America.
First time here?
No, I've toured on the other coast, but I've never toured down this coast.
Oh, that's right. Last year when you guys did a bunch of warm-up gigs in the Northeast. Well, cool. And this is not just a piano here, is it? This is the world-famous Kurzweil. Kurzweil, he wrote those great songs. No, this is more than just a piano. This is a multiple voice instrument. And it's cool. And how long have you been playing the accordion?
Well, actually, I've only been playing the accordion for about 12 months, so it's a relatively new instrument for me.
Pretty good. Excellent. Keep up the good work. Over here is Kit Morgan, the man that I've known longest here in the band. Several hours now. Because Kit was outside when I was doing my radio show. And you play excellent guitar, Kit. And how did you end up with Ian Anderson?
Oh, that's a kind of a long story. Dave heard that Ian was going to be getting another project together. I said, does he need a guitar player? He said, well, I did not. And so I just sent him a really cheeky letter. I said, I can do that. Give us a job. You know.
Now, does anybody here watch the Discovery Channel? You know, he asked me first, I thought, oh yeah, that's all I watch, man. PBS, Discovery, and A&E.
But
tell us what you do for the Discovery Channel, Kit.
Well, most of those wildlife programs are, the post-production is done in Bristol, in the city we all live, and I get the gig of playing the guitar. So mostly when you see a crocodile biting something's head off, and there's a guitar in the background, that's probably good.
Hey! So we've all heard it without realizing.
So as the antelope nervously approaches the watering hole, and the crocodile is on the other side waiting to go, ooh! Kit Morgan is sitting in a studio somewhere, watching this on the screen and adding the guitar sound effects. Like what?
Yeah.
Go on, tell us.
Play some.
Jim, you be the antelope.
Oh, okay.
This is the watering hole. No, you're pressing the wrong way. The watering hole is here. Watering hole is here.
Oh, great.
Hang on, can I find a good crocodile down there? Any crocodiles?
Yeah.
That's too far to walk. Too far. Crocodiles are not that.
All of a sudden, Kit's guitar isn't working.
Oh, that's really sad. I was looking forward to the crocodile biting my antelope music. It's all just gone.
It's always something.
Absolutely everything has gone up.
Cripey. This is just like playing in a club.
What, do I try the other guitar and see if it's a guitar problem or whether it's an equipment problem?
Oh, meanwhile, we'll talk to you with David Goodyear over here. The bassist.
See if his equipment works.
Dave, I'm behind you. This bass looks like a weapon over here. This thing is incredible, and you play it extremely well. Can you tell us a little about that particular instrument?
That's a bass made in New York City by a chap called Vinny Federa. And it's a Federa, I think its full name is an Anthony Jackson six-string contrabass guitar or something.
Wow, cool. Can you play some of them low notes for us?
Go on, do some really low notes.
Just a bass solo. Yeah.
Really low notes.
Yeah, just a few notes, you know, a couple of bars.
But they don't get any lower than this. This is about as low as it gets because he doesn't even own this guitar. He's so mean, he doesn't even have his own guitar. He borrowed this from a friend who, for some peculiar reason, keeps lending him this unbelievably expensive instrument to tour with them.
Wow. That is subsonic, man. Perfect. On the drums and percussion, we have Mr. James Duncan here. As you know, all the cool guys are named Jim. And how did you end up playing?
And all the cool guys named Jim are wearing bus hair. They all look like they've just been dragged off the bus for a second.
Twice.
A bus hair.
And how did you end up playing with this old fart?
Well, kind of similar to Kit, David had got the gig, and I'm a patient of David's, and he mentioned to me about the gig, and so I contacted him and got it.
Wow, that's terrific. And what are you, like, 14?
16.
All right, well, congratulations. Thanks for being here for this terrific evening of music. Ian, great band.
Yeah, it's terrific. And does that great band actually have a guitar that works over there now?
Oh, yes.
Is it working? Kid? Did it at the moment?
Oh, good.
Good. Well, then we'll tackle something, shall we? You confident? Confident? I'm confident if you're confident. Good. That's the spirit. I'm going to play a piece of music now, which is a kind of tricky one from the new album, and it's about that you know, strange confidence that comes from being in a crowd of people and being quite happy, but when you're kind of sat on your own somewhere or people are staring at you, I get really nervous. So I wrote this song called Lost in Crowds.
Thank you.
Part of the evening for us musicians, because everywhere we play on this tour, we find a local artist, sometimes somebody completely unknown, someone who's just perhaps an amateur musician, maybe plays in a couple of little clubs somewhere. Sometimes someone a little better known, and tonight we have someone quite well known for this area, and we get to play their song. So we become the backing group for an evening. And sometimes it's country and western, sometimes it's the blues, sometimes it's progressive rock, or sometimes it's that kind of really interesting, eclectic music, and this is a great example of that. Somebody that you probably know, Jim. You know the guy, so you've mentioned his name before I do.
Yes, I do. Mike Keneally is this
man's
name.
Mike Keneally.
And Mike, I've known for a number of years, and he is probably on musical circles best known as being Frank Zappa's stunt guitarist in the late '80s. You can hear him on one of those Best Band You Never Heard CDs by Zappa. So we like to bring Mike Keneally out here with his guitar.
Yeah, his very own guitar.
Where are you, Mike?
His own guitar. Mike Keneally. Oh, Mike. Jeff O'Toole played with Mike a couple of times in his band Beer for Dolphins, and it's good to see Mike. Very good. Join us on the sofa, Mike. And
I'll yeah.
Sure, you can be trusted with your own mic, unlike some of the folks.
Hello, testing.
Hi. A little nervous testing. Hey, 1, 2, 3. Interestingly, Scottish roadies, because there are a lot of Scottish roadies for some reason, and when they test microphones, they don't go 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, testing. They just seem to be, they just say two. And they go, two, two. And you hear that at rock and roll concerts all over the world. It's two, two. What happened to the one and the fucking three? I don't know, they got to be able to do that in Scotland. Anyway.
So, Mike, you're just back from Europe. What were you?
Holland.
That's Europe.
Yeah, it counts as part of that.
It's near the Netherlands, isn't it?
It's very near the Netherlands, and
and you can get there really easy because there's a tunnel that goes all the way.
Yeah. And they speak Dutch.
Holland Tunnel?
Exactly.
Holland Mike, would you like to say something?
No. What was the question? Oh, what was I doing in Holland? Oh, well, Dutch radio gave me an orchestra to write and record with. So I wrote a 52-minute piece for orchestra and electric guitar called The Universe Will Provide, and we were just there making an album of this piece. Thank you.
Wow. And so we're going to play the whole damn thing tonight for you.
The edit. We'll be playing exactly none of that tonight, but yeah, it was a dream come true.
Yeah. So do you get to conduct the orchestra, or do you just play the guitar?
I just wrote the music and then watched as they as the conductor helped put everything together, a magnificent conductor, fantastic orchestra, and then I recorded my guitar parts after the orchestra was all neatly in place.
Which is the scariest thing, the first time you actually played this live with the orchestra, or your audition with Frank Zappa?
The audition with Frank Zappa was surprisingly comfortable.
Was
and,
it?
Yeah, and I don't know why, but it was just that feeling, the type of feeling you get sometimes in life where you just know where you that you are where you belong. And that's the way I felt when I was in the room with Frank. He put me at ease, and I just knew everything was cool. On the other hand, when we premiered this orchestra piece, which we actually did live, we played it live at the Holland Festival in June prior to the recording. That was a bit more nerve-wracking, not least because the battery in my guitar died during the performance. So in that particular instance, the universe, yeah, you can relate. The universe did not provide in that particular instance. But it all worked out okay, actually. And once the technical malfeasance had been dealt with, it seemed like the performance went to a new level. Like that broke the tension somehow. And so we managed to get good practice in front of a paying audience, and then when we went into the studio a couple of weeks ago, everybody was feeling really confident, and we got a great album out of it.
Did the orchestra all dress up in formal orchestral garb for this, or were they casually dressed?
Perhaps the Dutch equivalent of formal orchestral garb, but yeah, everybody was just comfortable.
They always feel compelled, you know, the orchestra, which is a good thing. You know, they take it very seriously. It's all very formal, but they really like to wear their best, you know, black suits, white ties, bow ties, all that sort of stuff.
Well, they looked very snappy at the performance, but for the recording session,
like a bunch of demented penguins, I think.
And they play like it too.
And I've got a song on the album actually called A Raft of Penguins, which is just about that. It's about that curious mutual nervousness when you work with an orchestra, and they're kind of scared of us because we're like the rock kind of guys, and play by ear and improvise, do those frightening things, and they're kind of all classically trained, very formal and brilliant at what they do, but there is this sort of mutual nervousness of each other, and you have to break that down during rehearsal.
Right.
First 10 minutes, you've got to make them your pals, you've got to show them that we're all just musicians together.
This particular...
Even though they look like a bunch of stupid penguins and we don't. But anyway, that's what A Raft of Penguins is about. It's, you could probably definitely relate to that whole sort of...
This particular orchestra, I was very fortunate in that they're not just a straight orchestra. They have an electric rhythm section. They have a regular drum kit player. And they're used to, they're very fluent jazz improvisers as well as being able to play whatever's on the paper.
That's very unusual.
Yeah, very unusual orchestra. The Metropole Orchestra. If any of you need an orchestra, I'd recommend the Metropole.
Michael, fly them over for you.
Yeah. And is this record, is this a record? Is it going to be coming out as a record?
It'll be, the CD will be released in February or March.
Great.
And also I have my own band, my rock band, which is used to be called Beer for Dolphins, and now it's just called Mike Keneally Band because it was just too long and silly. And we're about halfway through a new record as well, which should be coming out around the same time as the orchestra album, so I'll have a new rock album and a new album with the orchestra early next year.
But the acoustic album, or the acoustic-ish album, which is the one that we're going to play this track from, that one's been out for, what, a few months now?
Yeah, actually, that's been out for almost 2 years, and that is the most recent album, which Jim McGinnis, being the consummate professionals, handed me a copy of. It's called Wooden Smoke.
Well, the reason he's handing you a copy is the same copies you handed him back in the dressing room. Now,
Monique. That's because I didn't
say
one.
I wasn't also a consummate professional.
Yeah, right.
So
okay.
Shall we play?
Yeah, let's do it. Tell me the name of the song.
Okay, the name of the song is Father's Day. And there you go.
Okay, that'd be good.
Father's Day.
Mike Keneally.
All right.
Consummate professional. Very, very sparkly guitar. I admire his sparkly guitar. And it's also green. Not many people have sparkly green guitars. That's a really green one. Am I doing this? Oh, I know.
Thank you. bicycle class of rolling flats and the screen that I suppose the sunlight rolls on the left. No instance of their dreams. Starter, wide and wide as a lightning comes crazily across the sky. And another few hundred miles roll by. I suppose the storm is closed on that faded rose which promptly explodes in my star.
It's sad because it's not because it's about a dead old black cat, but because it's really a song about how we don't really value and things around us. We take them for granted, and then we get a little upset when they're not there anymore. So it's really a song about us, not about black cats. But it's called My Old Black Cat.
Thank you.
lover, you could pass it by, just a quiet shadow. Got pushed around by all the other little guys. Didn't seem to mind much, just the way life goes. Padded it around in furry stairs. Didn't make any special friends. He played it cool with wide-eyed innocence, preferring gladly what the good Lord says.
His name was Mauser. He died of liver cancer just before Christmas. He was a good old chap, but Mauser is a kind of German slang word for shagger. Shagger, as in, you know, the sexual acts. Not the cats do it that way, but they kind of do it a little bit like that. And Mauser, unfortunately, of course, was neutered when he was about 6 months old, so he never actually got to shag. It's kind of sad. Sad. And, but he's probably thinking about it up there now. Me too. This one is a damn tricky piece. It's filled with references to European kind of music styles, and it's in alternating bars of 9/8 and 7/8, which makes it a little difficult to dance to, unless you're a mathematician. But if you are a mathematician, you'll know that 9 plus 7 gives you 16. Divide that by 4, you get 4 time, dead easy. Tap your foot all the way through, and come out at the end, just perfectly in time with the rest of it. This is called urology. It's not a study of the wee-wee hole or its contents, but just a bad pun on the circuit. Let's go, yeah. Thank you.
called urology, huh? You're in good hands with that one.
Okay. Well, urology's good. Urology's better than comfortable.
Were you the guy? This man here offered to pay me if I let him ask you a question.
Okay, Dave.
So, here.
Go ahead.
Hey, Ian, longtime Tull fan. I took my 25-year-old son to see Jethro Tull a couple of years ago. You'll be happy to know I did not name him Jethro. His name is Justin.
Justin.
Justin. Justin Hayward of Moody Blues won out. Sorry about
that. That's a screw.
Question for you. If you were on a deserted island and you could take one book, one album, and one movie, what would they be?
That's three questions.
Well, it's all three. All right. I'm paying him big bucks.
That's a good question. And it, obviously, I could think about that for ages. And it'll take a long time to pack anyway, especially if I'm going to desert islands. But, well, the record would be Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, because it's kind of martial and big and brave and got some good bits in it. And stuff like that. And the book would probably be a little known book by a chap you probably know as a spy thriller writer, John le Carré. He wrote a great book that you do have come across it. It's not about spies, it's just a brilliant, brilliant, weird, kind of scary ménage à trois. And it's called The Naive and Sentimental Lover by John le Carré. That's the one I would do. And what was the other thing that you're supposed to take? A movie. Oh, well, yeah, Light Relief. It would have to be the one I told you about earlier. It would have to be Spinal Tap, of course. What else? Am I allowed to take a condom? Am I the only person on this desert island? Well, I better take one anyway. I have a what? One person visit me on the desert island. Uh-huh. Well, I think it would have to be my kid sister, Pamela. Pamela Anderson. We could just climb onto those things and float away into the distance, couldn't we? The lady with a built-in water. Thanks very much for that, guys. That was good, that. I forgot that question. Good. Four questions you got there. Yeah, we're going to get to that point where we're going to do another piece from the Christmas album, the Jethro Tull piece, some kind of canny Christmas carol stuff, and then we're going to play one of the weirder arrangements of a piece called Living in the Past, and then that gets us to the end of the show, and we'll say thank you to everybody, and it'll be good, and you'll go home, and you'll be saying, oh, what a nice chap he was. He was really... He effed and blinded a little bit, and said some rude words. But otherwise, he was a nice chap, that's what you'll say. And we'll meet again sometime when we're playing here with Jethro Tull. It'd be nice to see you. So this one's a new Jethro Tull album, it's called God Rest Ye Merry Gentle Persons. corner, I saw a touch of snow there. Alright, this is the last one, and it's one of, as I said, one of many arrangements of Living in the Past, and I think you'll agree with me that this one is probably the most mediocre of all of them, but we'll have a lot of fun with this anyway. It's kind of an acoustic-y one, and it starts off with a quite a difficult, impassioned harmonica solo, which requires a lot of effort and concentration on my part. So, good luck to me, and thanks to Jim, and everybody at the Planet who's looking after us, and musical business in your neighborhood. That's Jim comes up in the band. This is Living in the Past. Good night to you after that. Take it down. Thank you. be very kind to us. Good night to Jim and Kenneth Stern.
Thank you.
Kamehara, Pitt Morgan, Duncan, David Julia. From Mike Keneally. The media announcer. Good night. Thanks for coming along. See you again next year, I hope.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Let me level with you. What happens here, you see, is that we pretend it's the end. But all that we do is we just kind of go up there, hide behind the curtain, while you go apeshit and call for more, and then we come back and play the song we were going to play anyway, which is called The Encore. So let's see, as rock and roll people do, they do this, yeah, rock on, Cleveland! So we'll do the thing, and then we'll come back and you know, just play it like you're supposed to play. It's showbiz. Yeah, rock on! Some of you may have done what I told you not to do. You went to that damn merchandising stand. I know, I can see the guilt on your faces. Some of you bought t-shirts and got a free kazoo. But those who didn't, don't worry, because I have a little stash of kazoos here. I'm going to take some down to you down there in the front couple of rows, and you're going to get to play the kazoo solos in locomotive breath.
Yeah!
It's fairly sacrilegious, you know, when it comes to a really good Jethro Tull song like Locomotive Breath, and we don't screw around with it doing this damn kazoo thing. But if you get a kazoo, the really important thing is you don't blow down the kazoo. You kind of hum or sing into the kazoo, into the short fat end, not the other end. But if you blow into it, all that happens is... and your eyes cross and your testicles shrivel up and no music comes out, so it's no damn good blowing on the damn thing, okay? So I'm going to give you some kazoos. You're going to play some kazoo for me, and Mike Keneally's going to come back and play not kazoo but his electric green and sparkly guitar. Yes he is. Yes he is. Now you stay where you are, I'm going to come and find you folks. Here we go. Gentlemen there, a kazoo for you. And I'm going to find some kind of sexy kazoo players. No, not you. Okay. Lady here, you look like a kazoo person. One, two, three. There you go. Brilliant. And yes, you've been good. You've been a good sport. The man with the many questions and only one kazoo. There's one for you too. Here you go. Brilliant. Kazoo for you, sir. They give me a really awkward to handle bag today. It's just so much like milking a cow in here. One for you, sir. There you go. One for you. Now, I only have one kazoo left now, and I think I'm going to save that for my friend Jim up here. Can I just climb up there, sir? That's very kind of you. Thank you. Where's Jim gone? Has he buggered off? Where's he gone? Where's Jim, my kazoo buddy? Oh, well, if he comes back, I'll put his kazoo on the chair. And if he accidentally sits on it, boy, is he going to get a warm surprise. Okay, no Jim. Obviously thought it was time to go. Mike Keneally, ladies and gentlemen.
Ah, I'm back, Ian.
Oh, you're back.
I had to go to the plant.
Had to go widdly-wee. And here's widdly-wee kazooie-woo. There you go.
Just kidding.
to write Willie Dixon wrote that. Here we go with a different version of Locomotive Breath. See you down there in a couple of minutes.
Talk to you tomorrow on the radio. God bless.
Cheers.